Welcome to the Phi Life Podcast. I'm John Barbin. With me is Brad Pilon, and I don't know. Brad's gonna start. What do we?
I think we're gonna start by talking about the fact that if anybody knows how to make a decent sounding podcast using Skype and two Logitech headsets, let us know because we're not having any luck with this. Obviously, John's typically louder than I am, and I mean the one kind of common complaint we get, other than is our brutal use of the English language, is the fact that you can never quite get the sound to balance out on these calls.
Yeah, I think I'm going to try to post-produce this one in Audacity and see. But if anyone's got an idea on software or how to like even us out, even out the sound on these files, drop us a note in the comments section.
Yep, because, I mean, again, if it's anything more complex than Skype, Logic headsets, and maybe running it through Audacity or GarageBand or something like that, it's beyond us. But anything we do to make it better for you guys, we'll gladly give it a try.
Yeah, we're just not all that technically savvy, that's all.
Yep. All right. And what'd you do today?
Interesting thing. I went down to a buddy's supplement shop, and I was waiting to talk to him, and it took like 45 minutes to – there's just people in there. And they weren't buying anything. People go to his shop to hang out. And
really?
Yeah. It's all guys. It's all young guys trying to get big. Well, not even just young. It's all different guys, and they're all – it's weird. It's like it's part of the culture. I guess I kind of knew this all along and maybe didn't want to admit it when I was this person. But a lot of guys anyways, and I guess some girls do it too, take on their exercise routine and their obsession with eating healthy or eating, you know, whatever, their diet as well. It becomes this like identity. It becomes the way they identify themselves, and they kind of live that. It's almost like they watch like Arnold Schwarzenegger's Pumping Iron and want to be that, but they're not that. But they want to live that life anyways, even though they're not Mr. Olympia. They're not in Venice Beach. They don't make their living working out and doing bodybuilding shows. They're not magazine models. They're none of those things. But it's like they want to live that life, so they just sort of go ahead and try to live that life anyways. So they identify themselves with their workouts and their diet plan. And you know, the trip to the supplement store isn't go in, grab your stuff, and leave. It's go in and hang out for an hour and talk shop about lifting weights and stuff. And it's to me, it's a bit pathetic because the guy talking isn't that big or that strong. And I see them at the gym, and year after year, they look the same. They're not really getting anywhere, but they like it's their identity. And they hang around the store. They try out all the new supplements. They think, you know, and I find it difficult to sit there watching because, you know, I mean, anyone listening probably is aware of my background, so I know I've formulated half the supplements in that store. So, you know, and listening to the person behind the counter pitch, you know, with the sales pitches that we sat and came up with, and I don't know, it's just kind of – I just want to grab those people and be like, do you realize what you're doing? Do you realize how, like, kind of ridiculous this is? And I mean, obviously I don't say anything, but it's just interesting – it's interesting watching. I think I mentioned this to you earlier today. There's just an air of desperation around these people.
Yeah, you said that. It well, because it's a culture, right? Like, what was a comment you made to me once about no one goes into a supplement shop to be skeptical. They go in to spend money. It's just what they're going to spend their money on.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Like, it's almost a guaranteed sale, right? When someone walks in.
Yeah. It's a guaranteed sale. Nothing in there's going to do anything. But they're in there. They're leaving without $50 in their pocket. It's just what are they leaving with?
Right.
Because they need to believe that they're different than everyone else, and their supplementation routine is part of what makes them different. So they go in there, and it wouldn't even matter what they buy, and they don't really realize that, but that's how it turns out.
Yes. Okay, so I'm going to do some comparisons here because from being in the supplement industry for as long as you and I have, to now the online industry, which is where we're trying to make a living, because neither one of us want to go through the hassles of actually producing a hard copy book, nor does it seem viable. I mean, the cool thing about ebooks, like the PDFs, I mean, Eats.Beat's been updated 3 times. It's been out 3 years. Once a year, we review all the research that's come out and the relevant stuff is added to the book. That would be almost impossible to do with a hard copy book, right? So we've geared towards online because of those benefits, but there's a lot of similarities between online and offline. There's a lot of similarities between like the ebooks on workouts and supplements. They're marketed almost the exact same way to the exact same people, you and I have decided, right?
Yeah, I would think so. It seems like it's the same crowd.
Yep. Now, the interesting thing, though, is that for me, from, you know, and I had the benefit of working in sort of, if you had the rate the companies I worked for, we're talking big pharma supplement companies, right? So they're big supplement, in which case they had money. So the issue there is that, see, the return on investment on your marketing and advertising dollars typically comes from exclusivity, right? Which usually means there's a patent on the ingredient that we've either created ourselves, you know, like the ones I'm on for growth hormone promoting products or testosterone promoting products, or you purchased it, right? You licensed the rights to it. Or the other option is that the raw material supplier you're buying that special raw material from, they've given you exclusivity, right? So you're the only game in town, which means that, you know, it's every dollar, you know, or million of dollars that you put into advertising is never really going to waste because it drives directly to your product. You're the only person that has that product, right? Create enough buzz, and what you're going to create is people talking about your product in the supplement shop like the one you're at, right? And chatting about it. No matter if they're saying good things or bad things, they're talking about your product and your product only. Which is weird because in the online world, no one has that. Right, you can't be exclusive. All you have is first to market, first concept, right? So it's just so weird to me. When you walk into a supplement shop, you can instantly tell just by the amount of money and push behind something if it's exclusive, right? So you know, okay, well, that ingredient that they're hanging their hat on it because not because it's the world's greatest ingredient, but because they're the only ones allowed to use it, right? And I think that a lot of, you know, most of the people who you are watching in that shop probably aren't aware of that, right? That the things like exclusivity come more into play in terms of how you know about an ingredient more than the actual ingredient's effectiveness. I mean, other than creatine, caffeine, and I'll say possibly green tea just for different reasons, most ingredients you know of today are because they were first to market, you know, they're new to come out and they're the first ones to do it with good advertising spend, or there is some sort of exclusivity behind that ingredient.
Which, and in neither case, does that have anything to do with whether or not they work?
Exactly. And that's the important thing to know is, yeah, like a patent, to get a patent, at least in Canada, United States, it has to be non-obvious, right? Useful. And holy crap, I forgot the third thing. But it definitely has to be non-obvious and useful.
Oh, and no prior art.
No prior art, yeah. So novel, useful.
And not obvious.
And not obvious, right? But so that's kind of the same thing. So novel, not obvious, and useful. But to be a successful supplement, right, you have to be obvious, right? People have to know what you're selling, right? So, I mean, if you're an NO product, you know, or a creatine product, people have to know you're an NO or a creatine product. You can't be so non-obvious. People are like, I have no idea what this is. So it doesn't matter if, you know, the powdered extract from some odd fish in Africa is the world's greatest, like, vasodilator. I mean, if your product doesn't have arginine in it, people aren't going to think of it as a nitric oxide product, right? You've got to be obvious, right? And then as we've learned, you really don't have to be that useful to be effective, because there's tons of garbage supplements out there that aren't useful at all, right? So the only thing left you have is to be, you know, novel but obvious. And to be novel but obvious, that's where you have to be some sort of exclusivity down the line. So it's just so phenomenal because it's such an interesting market to watch. And everybody just sort of, you know, laughs off the supplement industry in terms of like, oh, yeah, whatever, you know, doesn't work. And, you know, whatever, they're a bunch of scam artists. And my response to that is, well, they may or may not be scam artists, but holy crap, are they good business people, right? I mean, they, if indeed our ideas are correct. I'm not saying that we're 100% right, but let's just say under the theoretical situation where, well, other than creatine, which is probably even overhyped, there's never been a supplement that's actually worked. So let's just say that theoretically, holy cow. I mean, they've made a massive multi-billion dollar industry out of stuff that doesn't work, and we're going to laugh at them? And
yeah, no, you should study that. They're literally selling people nothing.
Yeah.
So that's my goodness, that's like genius.
Exactly. Now, the counter argument to this, so
why are we getting out of that industry?
Yeah, exactly. What are we doing? Because we want to tell people to eat less and think we'll make money from doing it. Oh, yeah. Dude, way to kill the call, buddy.
Yeah, I'm just like, what? Yeah. Okay. I think we're just going to talk ourselves back into the industry.
Exactly. So here's the counter argument, right? Is that the supplement industry is obviously making this money off of the promise of more muscle, less fat, right? The more muscle one is interesting because we know that the amount of muscle you can add is genetically limited, right? And is directly related to the work you do in the gym. If there was a supplement that worked for increasing muscle mass, it would work by increasing the rate at which you'd gain muscle from the work you did in the gym. Other than that, it's probably a steroid. So, but you've got these promises you're making that are promises of muscle loss and body fat, and people don't actually want to lose muscle. Sorry, what am I talking about? Gain muscle and lose body fat. They want the rewards that come from that, right? It's just the total better body, the new improved you, and all the rewards that come from it, right? So it's a very deeply rooted emotional thing, right? So in that regard, you know, well, they're doing an exceptional job of marketing, and they're making billions. Is it a form of exploitation? That would be the counter argument, right? So, I mean, and then in terms of like,
I would say, if you view people spending money as a vote yes for the product's effectiveness in one way or another, then, I mean, you ultimately, no matter how good the marketing pitch is, the person actually has to pull the money out and buy.
Right.
So, and if someone buys again and again, even though we can't show any measurable result,
it's still fitting some need, right?
It's something. If it's just the belief that I'm doing something better for myself by spending $50 a month on supplements, and they believe that that somehow is, you know, that calms some stress they have in their head about, like, you got to do something about yourself. And so having some supplements around in the house, even if they don't use them, just makes them feel – it makes that emotion go away for that time.
Yeah.
Then it's done something because there's no – you know, there's no proof that I can't show a scientific reason why any of them supplements would do anything, even if they did take them. But if spending $50 on a supplement a month gets somebody to stick to a calorie-restricted diet and go to the gym more often, even though they barely even touch the supplement, but the investment in the supplement makes them feel like they've invested in themselves, and then they're holding themselves accountable to that investment, then you, in a real roundabout sort of way, you can say that it did something.
Yeah, interesting point. My only counter-argument against that would be one of the largest knocks against the supplement industry would be the use of what seems to be obviously chemically enhanced people on steroids or people taking weight loss drugs, to advertise or promote their products. And I think that would be an issue where I would say would be crossing the line. I mean, that would be no different than doing something like disgusting, like, you know, if I took a bunch of weight loss drugs, if I took clenbuterol and then said, this is me, I need to stop eating, right? Like, I'm obviously – that's lying.
Oh, yeah, that's fraud. Well, it's advertising fraud.
Advertising fraud, exactly. Yeah, if you're taking a drug to lose weight and then claiming that a diet did it, you know, if you know better – you know, then you're pushing the limits. And I think that's probably the biggest knock against the supplement industry because they know how to market.
In my estimation, they do know better. Yes. I mean, you and I both know that a lot of the athletes in those ads are not – that the shape they're in isn't due to just a supplement.
Excellent. Okay, good, great point. Right, so then that becomes the issue. But, again, you're in the crossroads because it's allowable in the sense that, well, it's in the magazines, so it's allowable. And this reminds me a lot of...
But part of this comes down to the education. I guess it's inadvertently what you and I do is try to educate people. And in that movie, if you check out the movie Bigger, Stronger, Faster, there's a model of a fitness model who actually comes right out and says this stuff. So I'm not going to quote him because I'll misquote him. But if you just look up Bigger, Stronger, Faster online and look up Christian Boving, that name, you'll get a pretty telltale video clip out of him. And basically the point is what I'll say is if you look at a bodybuilding magazine and you actually think that you can look like that without drugs, I mean, if you haven't been in bodybuilding circles, maybe I can't expect you to realize that they're like, that's a drug induced state, but you can't pot. I mean, some of the onus is on you to at least do a little bit of due diligence and investigate whether or not that's actually feasible. Like, logically, that doesn't even make any sense. So, and I guess if you don't have a physiology or an anatomy background, perhaps you may think that, oh, maybe that guy just works out a lot. But I mean, at some point, don't you look at it and going, that's just not possible, like without drugs? Like, I'm shocked that people think that that's possible.
So again, are we back to the fact that based on that, everybody should basically bow down to their marketing and advertising because they've, no, it's, they've got to the point where, yeah, you believe that that's possible.
But I'm saying, you just look at it. How could that be possible without chemical enhancement?
Right.
It just doesn't make any sense. Like, if you look at the average cross-section of the population, then even look at the people in the gym. Look at all the people in the gym. And then there's that freak little group of, you know, a small percentage that are just the freaks. And, like, what makes you think that you – I mean, there's – If it was that easy and it was natural, why doesn't everybody work out turn into that?
Excellent point. But the point I was trying to make on top of that is that since that type of advertising has been around for we'll say, Jesus, 2010, holy cow, at least 40 years, with a track record like that, it's effective advertising, right? Mm-hmm. Which means that in 40 years, as a whole, the population has not gone, wait a second, I can't get like that. You know, somewhere along the lines, there's some sort of cue where that physique on a piece of paper beside a can makes a guy and or girl go like, you know what, that something about that physique just works for me. And I'm not going to question whether or not some supplements, because that physique is the one I've been flipping pages through this magazine to see. And that specific one is just going to drive me to the store to buy this product.
It may even be that people look at that and think, well, I don't want to be that big or that lean. But along the way to that, I'll stop somewhere short of it.
Oh, you want to hear a ridiculous story on that?
Yeah, hear me.
All right. So for people on this who've read Eat, Stop, Eat, and I kind of tell a bit of my life story in there, but I've always been a bit of a musclehead, right? So I'm talking 8, 9, 10 years old. I used to have a monthly subscription to Muscle and Fitness, right? Only even back then, right? So that would have been like in the 80s. Like, obviously the guys were just too big. Not necessarily the upper bodies, but the thing that as a you know, a young kid, this grossed me out, was the thighs were so big, especially the outer sweep, right? So I used to take a magic marker and color in a bit of the thigh so that it didn't look so grotesque. So if I was picking out the pictures like, that's what I want to look like, it would have been a big magic marker though, like taking the thighs down a notch.
Huh.
Because even at that age, I was like, the superhero upper body works, but something about just that ginormous thigh into that small kneecap into the small hips, I'm like, there something must be wrong with the picture. Like, I was convinced that, you know, it was actually the way the picture was taken or something that was skewing it, or that the shadows from the stage were messing it up. So I tried to, like, you know, hand correct it. It was the 1987 version of Photoshop, right? Me there with the magic marker trying to carve them out a bit. So even at a young age, you knew that I could tell that something was wrong there. But then 10 years later, that exact same injury is making me buy my Mega Man 5000 weight gain shake.
Mm.
So it's weird that at some point along there, you knew better, and then you gave up on knowing better, hoping that it was possible.
Yeah, that's I suppose that imagery presents the concept of possibility to people. That, like, you know, if you look at it as a spectrum, where on the one side of the spectrum is, you know, morbidly obese and out of shape and just not happy at all with the way you look, and you would never be standing on a stage. And then on the other side is female and male fitness competitors, maybe not female bodybuilders, but female fitness competitors and models and figure models, and then male bodybuilders. And that's the other end, like on stage wearing virtually nothing, ripped to shreds. And then I guess people picture themselves somewhere in there, in that spectrum. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, I don't want to go all the way onto the stage, and I don't want to be that big, and I'm not interested in being that ripped. But since, you know, here's evidence that all of that is possible, that I'll just go, like, you know, 70% of the way there, and I'll stop there because that's where I think it looks. But I don't think people realize how far away that look is.
Yeah, 70% is not possible.
And 70% is still a drug-induced look, maybe even 60%. Whatever it is in your mind that where you can naturally get to without it controlling your entire life, it's probably based on those type of pictures. Remember, based on those pictures, you can't even get anywhere near as close to them as you think. And well, if you lined up a natural athlete versus someone who's never touched drugs and is just an average person like you, who's trained their way to being in what is a really good shape for that, and then put their picture in a magazine next to the pictures you used to, you'd look at it going, what's this person doing in this magazine? Why is this out of shape person in this magazine? Because the way those magazines are designed, the people you see in them, the bar has been set so far off to one side, or, you know, of the spectrum, that what a realistic physique is won't even look right in those magazines. But out in public, they'll look great. And if you go on vacation, you see someone at a pool who's like, man, that person's in shape. They'll look great. But you take them and put them in a magazine, you'll be like, this person looks ridiculous. What are they doing in this magazine?
Yeah. Well, if you consider that Mr. Pro Bodybuilder, you know, at 5'9", 280 on stage, even 70% of that, so like quick math, like being 195-ish shredded on stage is probably not realistic for you without drugs at that same height. And that's just, I think that's the part that people understand how far to the right it's been skewed, right? So, you know, and when you're a young, again, as a young child, I knew that because I obviously saw there was something wrong with it. But by the time I was 16, 17, like you said, that it disappeared, it just became a symbol of what could be possible. And then you arbitrarily picked that, okay, well, if so-and-so is on stage at 250 and I'm roughly his same height, I should at least be able to hit 210, right? When really it's just, you can't.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting, dude. Don't know. Do you watch a lot of that used to be Saturday morning cartoons? Now it's Sunday morning cartoons.
No, I don't. No? I don't have cable.
Oh, well, okay. So you're missing out. What I found interesting.
They've moved. Is Sunday morning cartoons getting better?
Yes, it's all Sunday morning now, right?
Oh, really? Really? Because Sunday mornings used to be depressing because the cartoons are so bad.
Now Saturday morning, the cartoons are not that good. If you look at the latest group of them, whether it was the latest version of Batman to Wolverine and the X-Men, etc., and then I kind of went back and I've watched. I have two young kids. I don't have much of a life, right? So I rent Marvel and DC animated straight to DVD movies. Shut up, don't judge me. Whether it's Justice League or Superman or Superman versus Batman or whatever I'm watching. Shut up.
And right, and you're going to try to tell the story that you watch them with the kids in the room, but...
No, it's just like, me and Heather. We kid.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Let's remind everyone that...
They've gone to bed.
Yeah, they've gone to bed. They're not watching these.
Totally. The legs are always drawn small, which I find interesting. And, like, not just small because I've been skewed by living a life in bodybuilding, and I think they're small. We're talking, like, the calves can be massive, but very rarely are the legs ever drawn large. Right. In fact, the legs are typically drawn. The only person I can think of that's really legs being drawn large on would be the Incredible Hulk. But the legs are always drawn small. They definitely skew the proportion compared to what series typically used to. In fact, when I looked at the do you remember the old Batman cartoons that were around like maybe 10, 15 years ago?
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, if you see him now, which was, by the way, was like award-winning animation back in the day – he's very, very blocky compared to the new person who's like, you know, an Adonis index that was, you know, well beyond 1.618, but then tiny thighs, big calves. It's an interesting phenomenon that I'd love for anybody who's listening who has any experience in sort of animation or cartoons, why it's gone that direction, whether it's just the influence of sort of the anime culture, or if it's something else. But regardless, it's interesting all the different areas where we're told, you know, what an ideal size is. And to give you an idea, in Wolverine and the X-Men, I mean, his upper arms are significantly larger than his upper thighs. Right? So obviously not something that's possible by any means, right? But it's the image we're hit with. I think it's funny when people, you know, whine and complain about women's body images being affected by Barbie, and I'm sitting there going like, hello, right? Like it's any guy who's grown up in North America has grown up with superheroes, right? And actors portraying superheroes now, right? But
isn't it such a letdown when you see the actor who's going to play a superhero and you're like, oh, he's not big enough. He's not muscular. Like Hugh Jackman. I'm like, that's not Wolverine. Wolverine needs to be like way bigger than that.
And 6 inches shorter, right?
Six inches shorter, but like 100 pounds heavier. And then
then you realize what you're asking for, right?
Like, yeah, exactly. And then I'm sure the non-demented musclehead like you and I are, but like the average person who's, you know, especially women who'd be like, well, what's wrong with Hugh Jackman? He's in, you know, why couldn't that be Wolverine? But growing up reading the comics, my image of Wolverine is so much bigger than Hugh. I'm just like, no, that's the type of guy Wolverine would kick his ass. He's not big enough.
Yeah. Mind you, if we met Jackman in life, he'd probably be like, oh, dude, that dude's jacked.
Yeah, but on screen, it's not the image that's like that I have burned into my head that Wolverine's supposed to be.
Well, my favorite thing is case in point, whenever they list the actor who's about to portray one of our childhood idols, it's amazing because we just absolutely rip on the fact that they couldn't find a bigger guy and what the hell, and the guy's going to have to work over 5 years and there's no way he can possibly be that specific character, right? It never dawns on us that obviously that's how flawed the character drawn into our minds is, right? The flaw is back to the Hollywood actor who has really nothing to do for the next year and a bit to prepare for that role. And even though they're a Hollywood actor with all the training possible, you know, potential drug use, personal chef, personal trainers, there's no way in hell they'll ever match our expectations of that character. But we blame the Hollywood actors and not the character.
Yeah, the only way it would match is if they're computer generated, like the Incredible Hulk.
Like the Incredible Hulk, yeah.
And even then I was like, he still could be bigger.
Yeah, exactly. Right, so and that case in point, bringing this all together, I mean, that's why supplements sell, right? Because we've been indoctrinated into believing that the pinnacle of manliness is a level that just can't be hit. And it obviously can't be hit because when Hollywood tries to hit it for us, the only way they can do it is by literally going right back to the drawing board and drawing it.
Yeah, computer generation.
Hollywood cannot find an actor to match our expectations.
Nope.
Right? And granted, yes, you know, some Hollywood actors do get in shape. So Ryan Reynolds got in shape for Blade Trinity. That's what basically launched his career. Tyler Taylor Lautner got in shape for New Moon, and now he's a household name. But I guarantee you, if the Lautner kid got a role playing a superhero, we'd probably be like, whatever, he's not big enough. Right, like it all of a sudden becomes obvious.
Superheroes are supposed to be larger than life.
Exactly.
So they couldn't. They could never be somebody who you've seen. Because any human's not larger than life. So it just doesn't work.
Right. Okay. Now I'm going to tie it all back to superhero being the superhero is going to be now the reason for the supplementary. Watch this. It's because superheroes have an alternate identity, and that alternate identity is us. Therefore, we watch them every day.
Bruce Wayne, like Clark Kent and
Bruce
Superman.
Wayne, Bruce Banner. Yeah, like, I mean, they.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Bruce Wayne, that doesn't really work. Don't call me out on it, you fan geeks. But all the other ones, they work, right? They're average people who turn.
Yeah, Peter Parker.
Yep.
Right. Well, that was the allure. That's the allure for guys. I guess this is a very male-centric Phi Life, so I kind of apologize for any women listening.
Well,
no. But
women listening, now you realize why we're all.
I was going to say this gets into a guy's head. This is the, you know, we all grow up with these idols, you know, thanks to guys like Stan Lee who wrote the comics, and then but he captured exactly how guys are thinking. they're looking at these guys that are larger than life, and the guys that get caught up using drugs are trying to be. That's exactly what they're trying to do. They're trying to be larger than life.
Well, how many of them have Superman tattoos?
Lots of them. Like,
do you remember the was it the Arnold's we were at, or the Mr. Olympia's, when the dude had the actual Superman tattoo on his chest?
Yeah, like, come on, lots of guys have it on their shoulders. Like, it's just they want to be guys want to be a superhero, or at least they want to look like one. And the closest you can get is with tons and tons of drugs. When someone stops and looks at you twice and then three times, and like, what? That something's wrong with that guy. And that's almost the goal for a lot of guys who resort to the drug. They actually want to be larger than life.
Well, so if you're listening and you work in the supplement industry, we're giving you gold here for marketing and advertising people. I mean, this is, if you want to get down to the mentality of your consumer, we've nailed it for you, right? Your consumer wants to go from Clark Kent to Superman. That's what your product's supposed to do for them.
Right. And so bring it all back together. Incidentally, so that's why guys will go back and try the next supplement, because they're looking to be what they aren't willing to do, at least from muscle building being larger. They're not willing to use the drugs, so they're hoping one of the supplements will recreate drug-like gains without having to go into the black market to buy a drug. And that's why it persists.
Even though
they don't work, that's why they keep selling, because they keep trying the next one.
Yeah. So, and the amusing part about that is they're not willing to do drugs, right, to get to this deal. But if you think of the majority of stories trying superheroes, Captain America was on drugs. I mean, the whole story of Captain America is a weak, pathetic guy who took drugs and became Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Superman is an alien. The rest of them are mutants.
The Incredible Hulk has been genetically modified.
Yeah, gamma radiation. I mean, like, so
Spider-Man's been bit by a radioactive spider.
Right. So they all have drug-like stories, but the difference is it was all accidental or for a better cause, right? Mm-hmm. Like, none of them just took drugs, right? But it's funny, even in the comics, they know enough that they have to explain it away by saying he's a mutant, he's an alien, right? So, yeah, it's just a phenomenal, phenomenal situation that it's been ingrained in guys' heads that this is the pinnacle, this is the desired, that Clark Kent to Superman is possible. And that's why, with the right imagery beside your product, because I tell you, you pick the wrong physique, even if they're massive and shredded, just slightly wrong, it's not going to sell your product. But if you happen to hit that right look, when it's just superhero enough, your product's going to sell.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I think it has a lot to do with just that simple mentality. It's just a childhood belief or idolization of these characters and roles. And it's the, you know what, looking back at it then, the best supplement ads that I've ever seen are obviously the long 6-page advertorial ads. Love them or hate them, guys, they were amazing. And now I just realized the reason they were amazing is because they gave a science-y story, and what they were doing was giving you the superhero creation story.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first thing you find out of a superhero is you want to know how they got like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why they like that. And that's exactly what these ads do. It's not only do they give you the imagery you need to see, they give you your superhero origins explanation of that imagery.
It's just as over the top as explaining how Bruce Banner got caught in the gamma radiation and it turned him into the Hulk.
Yeah, which is exactly how nitric oxide pathways combined with receptor modifying ingredients causes this one protein powder to be 15,000 times better than the other one. Same thing. We just want to be wowed by the story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we can figure this stuff out, but we can't sell anything online. We're great at this.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. I think we can leave it at that for today.
Yeah. All right. So, but the point is, let's just wrap it all up, is that trying to phylife this together is that when regarding advertising, just realize that it's what you're being sold is always hopes and dreams, whether it's a bigger house, better car, better job, more freedom, or a superhero body. I mean, you may as well be selling the idea of flying or invisibility, right? Same thing. That's what you're being sold. That's why the imagery in that is so important, as are the words. So just be aware that's what you're being sold. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with sort of, picturing that as part of your life. But be aware that that's what's really driving your decision, your intent to purchase, not the actual benefits of the product, typically anyways.
Yeah. I mean, long ago I adopted the philosophy that the supplement industry is just hope in a bottle.
Yeah. Yeah, but now it's almost much more than that when you think about it, right? Like, it's exactly said Hope Mabato, but it goes deeper.
Mm. Yeah.
Which is cool. Yeah. Anyways, that was just a whole bunch of ramble. As a disclaimer, neither John nor I are experts in the field of superheroes. So if we got the creation and or alter ego name of a superhero wrong, please don't leave us nasty comments. But I can't hold my own on any conversation on Batman, just so you know.
Right.
Yep. All right, that's it. Let's end this before it gets worse.
Yeah, right. All right. So for Brad Peel and I'm John Barman, and that's your Fight Life podcast.